You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of March 6th. Yes, March Madness is here, 2018. And this is episode number 353. And this is Ray Parsons. Gosh, it's March already. It's still snowing. This is weird. Well, it is. I do live in North. I guess that's what I get for living up here. Hopefully the weather is a little bit nicer wherever you're at. And I'm jealous if it is. Anyway, this week, we're going to be talking about ICC 18. It's officially announced. What is that? Well, you're going to have to wait. It's called a teaser. And the biggest piece of Bigfoot evidence ever. Has it been debunked? Uh-oh. A flock of seagulls brought down the internet. And we're going to talk about aliens that might use our technology against us. And we'll also talk about the MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, sighting statistics for the month of February. And last but not least, a big shocking story that's going to happen tomorrow. We already know it's going to happen, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show. That's definitely a story you don't want to miss. And tonight's episode is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology and psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding, enhancing the human condition, and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, please visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. I don't know, it seems like that gets longer every week I read it. Anyway, what is going on? Well, in my corner of the world, it's already March. So that means that April is around the corner. And I do have one little speaking engagement in April. April 16th, I'll be at the Pickaway County District Public Library. That's out in the middle of nowhere in southern Ohio. And I'll be talking about ghosts. And it's near, I believe that's near Circleville, which is, if you look up Circleville, you'll see a big giant pumpkin, probably the water tower pumpkin picture. They're known for pumpkins. It's pretty cool. So I'll be down there at the Pickaway County District Public Library next month. Looking forward to that. And other than that, I'm just trying to keep my head down and just keep doing what I'm doing. I got some projects in the works that I'm working on and, just kind of recouping from my Twinsburg Paranormal Conference was last month. It was a lot of fun, but it's pretty stressful to do an event like that. So, yeah, I'm taking a little bit of a siesta, a vacation. I don't know what you'd call it. Plus starting a new job. So kind of taking a little bit of time away from speaking. But I just got an email today about an event right around Halloween for this year, which I'll more than likely be doing, which is going to be exciting and fun. And I'll talk more about that when it's official, but I can't, even though I already did, until it's officially official. It's official. Anyway, you didn't come to hear about that. You came to hear about the paranormal news. And that's what I've got for you. And we're going to jump right into cryptid news. And yeah, I talked about this right off the top here, ICC 18. Well, what is that? Well, I like to talk about conferences and conventions here on the Paranormal News Insider, and I've had a nice little list here. If you go to paranewsinsider.com, you can click on the events tab at the top. You can see a nice, healthy list of paranormal conferences, also UFO conferences, conventions, and cryptid conferences and conventions. It's pretty healthy. It's a pretty good list of events happening all over North America, primarily the United States, but North America nonetheless. And I'm really kind of excited about this. This is a I think my conference went over pretty well. It was a lot of fun. It was very well received. I mean, there wasn't hundreds of people there, but it was still good. And I think it was meaningful for the people that were there. But this first story, ICC 18, well, that stands for the International Cryptozoology Conference for 2018. And this is a very meaningful event. Some of the top speakers in cryptozoology will be there. And it's a place where a lot of ideas are shared, at least historically has been shared in the last two times it's been going on. And sometimes some of these cryptid conferences, a lot of people just use it for shock value. They'll just say something so they can get into the media or they can be heard or just get noticed. But the International Cryptozoology Conference 2018 should hopefully shed some light on some topics, or at least bring some topics to light and have people be able to talk about them. I don't want to say mature, but in a manner that is going to go over a lot better for the field than just speculation that typically occurs at a lot of these events. Not all of them, some of them, and I'm sure I've talked about a few stories here. Now, the International Cryptozoology Conference 2018 is presented by the International Cryptozoology Society and International Cryptozoology Museum, all of which is headed by Lauren Coleman. And being that all of this stuff is up in Portland, Maine, well, so is the International Cryptozoology Conference. It will be held in Portland, Maine on Labor Day weekend, specifically on Saturday and Sunday, September 1st and 2nd, 2018. And I can tell you I won't be there because one of those 2 days is my birthday. Won't tell you which one. The International Cryptozoology Museum is currently running a GoFundMe campaign that includes some offers that are only available through GoFundMe and will not be available when tickets go on sale to the general public. There's also a significant savings in the offers through the GoFundMe link. And general tickets will not go on sale until April 2018. And these offers will only be available till the end of March of 2018. So if you're thinking about going up there, if you're going to be in the area, you're going to be up in Maine on Labor Day weekend, which is pretty much that's it. That's the closing time for everything up there. That's the big weekend. Kids got to go back to school and all that stuff. If they've not already gone back, everything's closing down. It's going to snow probably in 2 weeks up in Maine. So that's pretty much the end of the season. Now, if you go to GoFundMe, and you've probably seen a lot of these types of things where they do offers where if you donate a certain amount of money, you get a lot of stuff back. And I'll tell you what, this is really tempting. If you donate a $100 attendee, donators will receive a conference ticket, conference t-shirt, museum pass, and an autographed book. It's not bad. $125 will be a supporter donator, and you'll receive a conference ticket, special Lauren Coleman tour of ICM during the at the International Cryptozoology Museum during the ICC 2018, and one annual International Cryptozoology Society membership. That's pretty special. $150 will get you a vendor. Those donators will receive a vending table, two museum passes, and two tickets to the conference. $250 will be a sponsor donator, and you'll receive two tickets to the event, one International Cryptozoology Society membership, two tour admissions, two t-shirts, plus one business or personal name appearing on the ICC 2018 t-shirts and in all conference materials. What a way to get your name out there. And if you really look at it, it really breaks it down. You're actually saving some money here for the attendee donators. It's actually a value of $130. You're only paying $100, so it's, you know, it's savings of $30. But $30 is $30, and it only goes up from there. You're saving $75 for a supporter. You're saving $50 for vendor. So you're saving money. $200 you'll save as a sponsor. You're spending $250, but you're going to save $200 instead of spending $450. With you add all that stuff together, it would be $450. So, hey, I don't know if you're into saving money but still spending money. I don't know how you save money by spending money, but this is a good deal. And if you really want to go to this conference, I highly recommend you get on the GoFundMe site as soon as possible and get your tickets quickly. And I'll throw that link in the chat room right here, right now. And people are laughing in the chat room. I don't know what I did, but glad I could be here to entertain you. You're welcome, Paul. And welcome, Dita. The GoFundMe, if you go to GoFundMe, I always think that sounds weird. GoFundMe. Anyway, I don't want to get too carried away with that. GoFundMe.com/ Third Annual Cryptozoology Conference, with little dashes in between third, and it's third with 3RD-annual-cryptozoology-conference. Now, don't spell dash. Use a dash, not a dash of paprika, a dash on your keyboard. Anyway, I think you'll get it. And I'll be sharing these links throughout the week on my Facebook site as well as Twitter. I don't know, I might get banned from Facebook. That's a long story. But anyway, I think it's definitely a conference that if you're interested in cryptozoology and you have the opportunity to get up to that area, hotels and stuff should be a little cheaper around that time of the year. But you definitely want to try to book all that as soon as possible, even though it's only March. I know, it's crazy. And what else is going on? Well, the Patterson-Gimlin film. You know about that, right? No? Well, back on October 20th, 1967, it was filmed in the woods of Northern California, and it's gone on to be one of the most iconic pieces of paranormal history, let alone cryptozoology and of Bigfoot media. It was where Patty was filmed. Well, that's her nickname. And that's the famous Patterson-Gimlin film where Bigfoot was shot. Well, not shot. He wasn't shot. She wasn't shot, I should say. The video was taken place or shot in the woods. And we see this Bigfoot creature walking from the left to the right. And it was kind of jumpy. The film was moving all around and everything. And that's the video that started it all. And last year, last October, it celebrated its 50th anniversary. Obviously, back on October 20th of 2017. And even though it's been considered by a lot of people to be the best evidence yet, or even best evidence ever, of the existence of Bigfoot, many are and have been skeptical of the film. There's been a lot of people that have come forward and say they were part of a hoax, or they knew somebody with a costume, and so on and so forth. But nothing has ever been substantiated. There's a lot of, I don't say theories, but hypotheses about different things. But again, no one's been able to really dig up enough information to push it one way. And obviously, no one's been able to validate it either, that it was definitively a Bigfoot, although people have their opinions about that as well. And despite numerous attempts to debunk it, or at least find evidence of a hoax, the film still stands. And it's obviously what probably, I guess it is, the oldest glimpse of a potential Bigfoot sighting ever. And over the years, the Patterson-Gimlin film has been reanalyzed and re-scrutinized. But again, no one has really removed it from the possibility that it just might be genuine. And you might have seen this. A story recently popped up with a headline that really caught my eye. And I was kind of wondering, wow, is there new evidence? Somebody found some new information about the Patterson-Gimlin film after all this time? Well, a headline said, quote, "Bigfoot mystery cracked wide open after digital breakthrough with world-famous footage, unquote. And that was from the Daily Star. And The Express, which is like the Daily Star, it's based in the United Kingdom. And they ran a similar story with the headline, quote, "Is this real? Does digital breakthrough reveal truth about infamous Bigfoot footage?" unquote. Well, that certainly piqued my interest, and I read both of these stories as I did some research on this, and I don't know, I was a little let down because it wasn't anything new, more or less, but both of these stories centered on the purportedly new evidence that this is essentially, it's really nothing more than somebody stabilized the video. That's all it is. They took the original video and they just digitally stabilized it. So they were able to take the shakiness out and just give you what you would see if the Bigfoot was just walking around. Now, in the original video, like I said, it's very shaky. They were getting off of a horse trying to film this thing and running at it, trying to get the film. At least that's how the story goes. But in this new video, it's not really a new video. It's just redone. It's just stabilized, essentially. You basically get a glimpse of what it would be like if you saw Bigfoot strolling by. Like, I guess if you were sitting in a camp chair and you saw Patty walk by, that's the same look you'd get. You're just sitting there. Nothing's shaking. Maybe you are. I don't know if you're afraid of Bigfoot. Purportedly, the thread has many people saying that it looks fake, that the video, now that they're able to see it without shakiness, it doesn't appear real. And that most people in this thread, if you read the stories, they all agree it's not a legitimate video of a Bigfoot. And it just seems like, well, this new evidence points to this as being fraud, as being fake. It's not real. It's a costume, or it just doesn't look right or real. Now, there's a couple of issues I have with the story. First, the person who posted this thread, they deleted their account. They still have their Imgur account, but they've deleted their Reddit account, which is really weird. But I guess it's not mysterious. They probably didn't expect so many comments, hundreds of comments on this thread, and for the story to become a national press story. It's big. It's out there. The overwhelming majority of comments I read, honestly, were not very serious. They were more or less jokes about it being fake. It really wasn't anything constructive. Wasn't really anything that would sway me one way or the other. And I don't know. I didn't dig that far that these Daily Star and the Express did to find quotes that really made it sound like people were extremely doubtful about this. They must have really dug deep to find some of these quotes, because I didn't really see those same exact quotes, but most of the stuff I saw, not very serious. And you know, the young crowd, you know, here's the other part with this. Anyone with a little bit of time on their hands, you might have been able to look up this video. If you search for it, you would have found it. And reality, this is not the first time this video has been shown stabilized. I counted at least four videos that showed this going back from last year all the way through 2012. So at least four times, at least four other people over the course of 6 years have shown stabilized portions of this video. So I don't know why all of a sudden this is front page news, unless it's just to sell or to get click-throughs, which is more than likely what this is all about. It's a little bit of popularity, a few hundred people clicking on this link, and obviously you know, newspapers, you know, they want something that they know people are interested in or is controversial, obviously. So I think that's why they pushed this story out, and they pushed it into a negative light, that it's actually exposing the truth for the first time ever, which it's really not. It's just giving you a different glance. But again, if you do your research, if you look around, there's YouTube videos everywhere. And again, one as far back as 2012. Now, let me copy this. I'm going to throw this in the chat room. I'm not sure how this is going to work. Might break the internet. Okay. You're going to have to click on that link, and you could go and you could see what I'm talking about here, about the stabilized portion of this video. And you can kind of get a look-see for yourself to see what this looks like. And that's straight off of this person's Imgur website. And I kind of started to say, until I had another thought, that the biggest problem here, especially with the younger generation, people that are maybe 30 years and younger, that really haven't grown up with, I mean, for me, I remember watching the frame 352, you know, the when the Patty turns around and looks over her right shoulder back toward the camera. That was on Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of. And it's always been this mysterious thing, because basically that's the big piece of evidence. It's other than the footprints of Jerry Cruz back in that same time frame, but you know, it wasn't as front page news type of stuff as the Patterson Gimlin film has been. Obviously, it's more tangible, something you can watch and learn from and look over and over. And it's just mind boggling because you're looking at something you can't explain it. But since the internet has come around, the Patterson Gimlin film has basically served as the mold for all of the hoax videos that have come out since. And they're, I would say, an overwhelming majority. I don't like putting a number on things or a percentage, but I would say it's pretty high. It's got to be in the 90 percentile range of these are all fake. I mean, they're 90 percentile, meaning it wouldn't take a genius to be able to figure out, or we could definitively say that's not real. That's a hoax, either admitted, or we could find evidence that would suggest that that's a person in a hoodie, or that's a bear, or it's something else, or it's not even a Bigfoot at all. We can pretty much dismiss a huge percentage of these videos. And numerous videos have been reported, I should say reproduced, as hoaxes throughout the years, and they use the same shooting style. So you see this, the creature moving from one side to the other, maybe from the front to the back, but it's still this traveling creature trying not to be seen. It fits the same MO as the Patterson Gimlin film. So I think many people, now that they're seeing this stabilized video, maybe they really haven't put much thought into the Patterson Gimlin film until now. So now they're just viewing this as just another hoax video. It's unfortunately, and I've said this before, it's become part of the culture of cryptozoology, mainly Bigfoot. Bigfoot videos are just fake. That's just what people believe, that every single one of them are fake. And it's just become the thing to do, to create a fake Bigfoot video. Everybody wants to do it just because there are a handful of people that believe them. And some people just do it because, everybody else does it, and we know they're all fake, so I'm just going to make one because it's fun. Maybe not to fool people, but just because a lot of people don't think that it's real, and they don't think that a lot of other people think it's real. So they just make these fake videos, and they just churn them out because it's just a thing to do. It's memes. Everybody wants to get on board, and everybody wants to pass around and be on, you know, whatever is popular at the time. But I think a lot of people forget this was from 1967, over 50 years ago. The technology did not allow for a lot of the things that people are claiming, the intricate costumes, to be manufactured that flawlessly. I mean, people are saying, well, I could see a boot on the right leg, or I can see a zipper, or I can see this and this shadow. That's not really proof of anything. It's just your opinion. You know, light and shadow can create all kinds of things. We've talked about that here on the show many, many times, pareidolia. So again, it's we don't really know. 50 years ago, yes, Planet of the Apes was coming out around that time, and their technology, their suits, you know, the experts that designed that suit said, no way, that technology to do what that thing did, no way, did not exist. or they would have known about it. Now, I don't want to go down that road and get into this debate, but that's just the general consensus, and that just seems to be what has been said by a lot of people in the know about the technology of the time. And think about this too. You'd have to transport it pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. It's still a fairly remote location, but it's not as remote as it once was, as pretty much nowhere is this day and age, I guess. Out in the middle of nowhere, this intricate suit. And this thing just walks across the riverbed like nothing. Now, if I'm wearing a suit, I don't know about you, but a little admission here. I've dressed up as the Easter Bunny, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I've dressed up as Elmo before. It's fun stuff. I don't know. It's weird. I know. Call me weird. I already know I'm weird, but dressing up in a costume, it is extremely difficult to know where you're walking or what you're doing. And I would find it highly questionable that someone could jump into that suit, even after practicing, and be able to walk across a riverbed with rocks and debris that flawlessly. I'm sorry. That's the argument right there, that it's not a costume. If you've never worn a costume, you really don't know. And I'm not just talking like going and getting a little mask at Walmart. I'm talking about a full-fledged thing that covers your head, you know, your entire body covered. I'm sorry. I'm just not buying that. But again, people have the perception because this is all they know. They only know the 90s and the 2000s, and they know all these hoaxes, and they're comparing it. They're retroactively stating that this is a hoax because everything that's come since is a hoax. Now, I'm not saying it's definitive. I'm, you know, granted, Patterson and Gimlin, they were in the woods to make a Bigfoot film. That's the truth. And they did shop this video around, so who knows? But what I do know is no matter how much you watch this video, how much you analyze it, how much you draw your personal conclusions, it's never going to solve what was seen that day in the woods of Northern California. And I'm going to show, throw these links in here. I'll throw the Daily Star link in there in case you haven't read this. Boom. And I'll also throw the original Reddit thread in there. Some of the comments, just the comment thread. It's pretty entertaining. And you can read that at your leisure. And again, throughout the next few days, I'll be sharing these links through social media. And you can get your fill of these links. And some of these links have come out, the Daily Star and I think there's three or four of them that all came out around the same time. And they all kind of link back. So I'll probably more or less share the – well, I'll share one of the stories on the Reddit link that'll have the video in it. And you can give your own opinion. I mean, it's to each his own. I mean, we all might have our own – a viewpoint of what this thing might be, or, you know, looking at it in a new light. If you've not seen stabilized video of the Patterson-Gimlin film, then hey, you're in for a treat. If you've never seen it, it is interesting to see, but I've seen the same thing before. Some of it were like black and white, and others were a little bit blurrier, but it's pretty good. But I've seen very similar footage before of the stabilized video. And what else do we have? So, yeah, again, it's great if you're in the chat room, if you're live listening in. But again, don't fret. Don't worry. I will be sharing these links that I've talked about here, you know, that I'm sharing in the chat room. You can certainly get a hold of those through social media throughout the week. Don't worry. I'll share them and you can follow along. You're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking cryptozoology right now. And Well, that's it. We're done. Cryptozoology is over. Sorry about that. UFO news. No, I got you all excited. You thought I was going to talk about Chupacabra. No, I'm not going to talk about Chupacabra. There is a little story about Chupacabra, but basically just people jumped to conclusions. Imagine that. So we're going to jump to UFO news. And this is the, I don't know, for me, I think this is the biggest story of the week by far. And it, you know, I didn't think it was going to be. And I briefly mentioned this last week, the strange video that showed up on the personal Facebook page of Milwaukee Fox 6 chief meteorologist Rob Haswell. I kind of mentioned it, that I saw the video in the morning and I kind of revisited in the afternoon. And they kind of had a good idea and I kind of had a good idea, but there was nothing conclusive that I read at the time. Now, Rob posted this video on his page at about 5 a.m. Central Time. And if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, in the video, you will see the typical scene that you'll see that accompanies when many news stories or news stations go to break or they come back or they're showing you kind of the traffic in the background or, you know, the city scene kind of thing. Now, in this live shot, it was shown that it was live. Suddenly, there's a couple dozen strange objects moving in the sky, kind of upper towards the upper left center area of the shot. And these objects are moving randomly, but they're appearing and disappearing strangely. And there's kind of like, they almost look like they're lighting up and they're leaving these streaks of light. And it's really incredible. And what can it be? Well, UFOs, right? And the post that Rob Haswell shared on his personal Facebook page, he wrote, quote, "Did you see the lights over the city this morning? Most likely birds reflecting the city lights, but it sure freaked us out," unquote. And shortly after that, you know, he made a comment that it might also be camera artifacts. It may be camera artifacts or may also be camera artifacts, since no one had stepped forward to state they had seen anything. He had made the comment, and this was, I think, about an hour later. But someone had stepped forward, but that video didn't get any attention until the following day, where it was not welcomed with open arms. A lot of people were following, again, they were following Rob Haswell's thing, but if you were following the Fox 6 in Milwaukee, all of this stuff came to light. And I saw this later on that night after the show was posted. I went back and looked through Facebook, and there it was. Now, Amy DuPont and her cameraman, they were called by her producer to see if they had seen anything that morning. So this is a little after this, the initial live sighting. They were all talking about it in the studio. And, you know, mind you, this wasn't a lead story or anything. This was just something, again, they were talking about. They were following for the fun of it. And Amy and her cameraman were at the Milwaukee County Courthouse, where they not only saw, but they filmed the large flock of white seagulls still in the early morning hours. And less than an hour after the original sighting, not too far away. Mystery solved. That's what they said. And so mystery solved, right? Well, not so fast. A lot of people, I would say an overwhelming majority of people, said, no way, not so fast. We're not that stupid. You've got to be kidding me. What are you trying to cover up? So on and so forth. Many felt the seagulls could not have explained what appeared to be flashing objects in the sky, nor could it explain the streaks of light that appeared on the camera. Wow. So did a television station get caught trying to hide the truth, bury disclosure, and provide smoke and mirrors to dissuade us from seeing the reality all around us? Well, some would think so, but it's not quite that complicated. The birds are not self-illuminating. A lot of people said this over and over again. Self-illuminating objects. No, These are large white seagulls that were hitting the lights of the city just right for the rooftop camera. Now, the streaks were camera artifacts, just like Rob Haswell had stated. And many also felt that Rob stated that he had no idea and was shocked to see what he did. Well, he initially stated he had no idea what it was, but within minutes replied to his post to say that it was more than likely birds and also mentioned camera artifacts, which was the conclusion by others in the station. Now, a pile of comments and a barrage of insults on the solution to this innocent video, to me, are more confusing than trying to understand how simple this conclusion really is. A cover-up? A large number of UFOs flying over the most populous municipality in Wisconsin with absolutely no witnesses? Nobody called anybody to report seeing anything? Not a single witness, not a single police report. No one called the fire department. Nobody called anybody to say they saw anything in the sky. Does Fox 6 have that kind of power? No. Can't be the solution since seagulls don't have lights on their butts. People actually said that. It can't be the solution since seagulls don't have lights on their butts. Wow. Well, I really don't know. I'm not sure why it's so hard for some people to actually just embrace a simple explanation based on observation and deduction instead of trying to find the most outlandish explanation and attaching a list of reasons as to why that would be correct without any shred of data to support it. But let's kind of summarize things here. The seagulls were not as high as what many people were thinking. They were thinking they were like a mile up or something. Not even close. Not even close. And some people were thinking they were moving hundreds of miles per hour. No. They were also not self-illuminating, but again, reflecting the lights back from below and toward the very simple digital camera that sat on a rooftop. This isn't a complicated movie camera. This is probably just some store-bought little camera here. This isn't anything intricate. And ultimately created the camera artifact, a blur. Now, to support this, Mick West of Metabunk.org took both videos and put them together by adding the motion blur to the second video and put them side by side. These two videos match up perfectly. They look exactly the same. Sorry, conspiracy theorists. And I know shooting from the ground toward the sky of the county courthouse, it did look a little bit different than shooting across the sky towards these objects that were a little further away. But when you look at them side by side, they look exactly the same. Now, Mick also demonstrates that the camera is overexposed. And if you look closely, cars shown with it are also creating the same exact camera streaking artifact. Again, due to the overexposed camera setting. That's why the lights looked extra bright. And it's caused from the bright lights. It's just technology, folks. Now, he took this a step further and demonstrated where both of the scenes took place and gave a pretty convincing image of the height of the seagulls, which he estimated to be about 250 feet. And then he put these two scenes close together, and you can see that it makes a lot of sense that these birds just traveled a very short distance to be filmed at the county courthouse about a half hour later, which is what Amy DuPont filmed and then put on Facebook shortly thereafter to hopefully answer this. But nobody saw all this coming, this backlash that has been thrown their way. It's really crazy. Now, what really put this in perspective for me, and this was shocking when I saw this, how many people have overreacted about this story? It's just mind-boggling. But when I watch the hoax-based UFO conspiracy YouTube channel, and I've talked about them here many times about being hoaxers, Secure Team 10, you've heard about this, and I expected them to really play this up and to jump on this bandwagon and try to get a whole new flock of followers, no pun intended. But I was shocked. I was very shocked. Tyler from Security Team 10 actually came to the same conclusion as those on the ground in Milwaukee. It's just birds and camera artifacts. I was shocked to hear him say that, because usually he takes the outlandish and the most ridiculous way out, and has been pointed out numerous times by a lot of people that it's just fake videos and just the wrong things. He's just totally using it completely out of context. But he even told his viewers to, quote, use your common sense, unquote. I about fell out of my chair. Seriously. Wow. Well, his followers essentially threw a collective temper tantrum. They kind of tore him up. But I'm happy to see that some intelligent analysis is coming out of that camp. But to me, that was shocking to see that even a hoaxer was pointing it out the obvious here. Now, the group of seagulls were seen close to the original shot in this second scene. And while it might not have been seemingly performing exactly in the video, again, it's just a different angle. I don't see why people are ignoring this as a solution or getting angry at how simple this really is. Again, with motion blur added, they look exactly the same. And another astounding thing is that I was honestly shocked to learn that a lot of people swear, and they feel definitive, that birds absolutely do not fly at night, especially seagulls. I didn't know that people thought that was a fact. That was astounding. Now, I've lived near Lake Erie in Ohio almost my entire life. I've seen seagulls flying at night numerous times. Numerous times. And actually, it's funny, because when I was reading these comments, I was like, you got to be kidding. I just literally a few weeks ago, I was coming into work about 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30-ish. And I saw seagulls flying around the parking lot at work. So to me, it's not a big deal. And as far as birds over a large metropolitan city, it's never really night with all those lights. I mean, look how bright it was. And as I said, this was more than likely the explanation I gave last week as well. So that to me, to you guys, my listeners, it should have been no big deal. I already kind of gave you the heads up about that. But when I talked about the story, it's just kind of a brief thing, because I knew some people were talking about it, and I didn't realize it was going to be such a big deal. So I'm glad I actually covered it when I did, and that we could come back here and talk about it again. And well, I'll give you the Metabunk, because this is really good. I'll throw the Metabunk link in the chat room for you guys. Take a look at. I know. Tell you what, it really shows that when people become opinionated about something that they feel is the explanation over a logical observation and documentation, that, you know, scientifically speaking, people kind of bound together and they jump to conclusions. And the conclusions of the group may be a little bit more extreme than that of the individual. And it's exactly what we saw here. It's exactly what we saw. And it's called group polarization. This was the word I was looking for. Group polarization. So essentially, again, people as a group make bigger kind of feelings and emotions about an event than they would as individuals. So I guess you could say that birds of a feather flock together. Wow. Okay. Thanks. Anyway, moving along, we're going to talk a little bit more about, we've talked about this before. We'll talk a little bit more about discovering life in outer space. I hope you guys aren't getting tired of that topic. It's interesting. It's popping up more and more. And again, we've talked about this a lot lately, about discovering any kind of life in space or potentially intelligent life out there. I hope there's some intelligent life out there, including some of the dangers of finding intelligent life out there. But a simple scenario has been overlooked by those who give warnings about communicating with the vast unknown. We've heard a lot of people talk about this. Be careful what you do out there because you don't know what they're going to come and do. Does anybody remember the 1996 movie Independence Day with Will Smith, Bill Pullman, Jeff Goldblum? But the aliens in this movie hit Earth hard, using its technology against itself. And it was Goldblum's character that helped install a virus that allowed Earth to fight back. So now two astrophysicists have proposed that the use of technology to collect and decipher signals from outer space, such as those used by SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, could pose a great risk if the data contained a virus. The main point of their paper is that the message could possibly be contaminated with some sort of virus, and there's no way we could decontaminate it and would thus potentially expose Earth to an alien invasion long before any alien life actually reaches the planet. Now, the abstract states, quote, "A complex message from space may require the use of computers to display, analyze, and understand. Such a message cannot be decontaminated with certainty, and technical risks remain, which can pose an existential threat. Complex messages would need to be destroyed in the risk adverse case," unquote. So Seth Shostak, senior astronomer from the SETI Institute, reacted to this paper with a few interesting points. He said, quote, "If these nasty aliens are more than 40 light years away, they won't know we have personal computers, let alone which operating system they should target. If they're more than 80 light years away, they won't know if we have computers of any kind. Maybe they'll try to disable our abacuses," unquote. Well, that's kind of ridiculous. But again, the further away they are, they're seeing our technology at that time. So they're not seeing us in the now, unless they have little UFOs that are spying on us. But they're seeing us however far away they are. That's what they're seeing. They're 80 light years away. They're seeing our 80-year past history through a telescope lens. So that's kind of why that makes sense. Now, we have to admit that despite our technical prowess, we're still really in our infancy with computers. And how would any alien culture know how to interact with our technology, let alone how to easily disable it with encrypted messages? Although we honestly can't discount the basis for these claims. Now, the weird thing about this is this paper was not submitted in a peer-reviewed journal, but in a non-peer-reviewed academic archive. So that pretty much means I wouldn't take it to high consideration. And speaking of UFOs, we're going to talk about the MUFON's sighting statistics for the month of February, because it's now March, right? And let me tell you, yikes. My prediction for the February MUFON sighting statistics was 622 worldwide sightings, with 451 occurring in the United States. That's what I thought was going to happen. That's what I thought they were going to report. And before I tell you the number that it actually was, I'll tell you that for the month of January, they reported 690 worldwide sightings and 495 for the U.S. That's kind of what I based my numbers on. And in 2017, it was 580 total sightings, with 404 in the U.S. for January and 564 and 405 for February of last year. So that's why I kind of dropped my guess a little bit, but I didn't drop it enough. And again, my guess was 662 total, with 451 here in the United States. Well, I wasn't even close. Again, for the month of February 2018, MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, reported 548 worldwide sightings, with 362 occurring in the United States. Now, this represents their lowest total since April of last year for both worldwide and U.S. sighting reports. Now, of the 548 worldwide sightings, Canada and the United Kingdom both reported 42. So that's a huge drop off from the United States' 362. France reported 18. Australia had 11. Germany, 7. Brazil and Ireland had 5. Spain and New Zealand had 4. And 33 other countries turned in 2 or 1, with actually 21 of the remaining 33 turned in just one report each. Yikes, it's not very much. And as far as the United States is concerned, again, was the of the 362 in the United States. So the states breakdown: California had 62, Arizona had 25, Texas 21, Florida turned in 20, Pennsylvania had 19, Colorado 16, New York 13, state of Washington 12, Michigan and New Mexico had 11 reports each, and Oregon, Indiana, and New Jersey had 10. With, let's see, Nevada had 9, Virginia, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Georgia turned in 8, Tennessee and Missouri was 7, North Carolina was 6, and the good old Buckeye State, Ohio, with Massachusetts and Wisconsin turned in 5, then it drops off from there, and drops off real fast. So then let's take a look. I do a per capita breakdown. So what I like to do is look at these number of reports and represent them per state, looking at how many per capita, because some states obviously have a lot more people, and the state of California is always number one in sightings. But again, they're number one in population. So that really doesn't represent how many people per capita saw a UFO sighting. Now, MUFON used to do this. They used to give their per capita sightings. I don't know why they don't do it anymore, other than it really shows how real insignificant these statistics really are. It's really just a small, small percentage, because they're really not getting a lot of cases. And there's a lot of reasons for that, which I'll talk about here in a second. But if you take the U.S. population and you look at the number of reports for this month, it breaks down to a 0.172 per capita. So per 100,000 people in the United States, only 0.172. So basically less than one out of every 500,000 people reported a UFO to MUFON in the month of March. So California was number one with 62 sightings, but that puts their per capita actually at a 0.158, well below the U.S. average. Well, not well below, but below it. So but who cares about the fact that they had 62 and they were way over everyone else? Their per capita is pretty low because, again, they're number one in population. So then we look at Arizona. They turned in 25 reports. Well, they're number 14 in state population rank. So their per capita is 0.361. That's pretty significant over 0.158. Colorado, number 21 in state population, turned in 16 reports. Their per capita was 0.289. New Mexico, which is number 36 in state population, they only had 11 sightings, but their per capita was 0.529. That's pretty good. So a half of a person for every 100,000, or basically one out of every 200,000 people reported a UFO to MUFON. Now, Maine, state of Maine, which is number 42, they turned in 4 reports, a whopping 4 reports, but their per capita was 0.3. So it's pretty close to Arizona that turned in 25. So you see how state population affects the statistical value of these reports. Now, again, I was going to mention that there's a lot of information here that's not making this perfect, and that's why I think MUFON doesn't do this anymore with the per capita, because they're taking the reports that happened in the month of February that I'm reporting to you now, and a case may have actually happened in another month. It might have happened in January. It could have happened in February of 2004. It might have been historical. This just represents when these cases were reported. It doesn't say when they actually occurred. So it's kind of a misrepresentation. And it also doesn't include if these cases were logically explained or not. These are just a lump of cases that were reported in this time frame. So take that into consideration. But also remember statistics. And I think I got time here. I was going to do a book of the week. And I've talked about doing more stuff to do with science or with other kind of things you need as a paranormal investigator, as a researcher. And I think statistics really is not talked about enough or really even at all in the paranormal fields. And I think it's highly overlooked. And we've talked a lot of statistics tonight. And I've made a point of talking about statistics and making mention of statistics because it's that important, especially if we're doing work in the paranormal. And statistics is actually a science itself. It's the science of collecting, analyzing, and making inference from data. And it's used by scientists. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you claim to be a scientifically paranormal group, you better have some statistics. You better know how statistics work because that's the backbone of what we do here. And it goes hand in hand with the scientific method, making an observation, forming a question, form a hypothesis, conduct an experiment, and then you analyze the data and draw a conclusion. How do you do that? Well, usually with statistics. It doesn't matter what format you're using. If you're using, if you're submitting reports for people to fill out or you're doing observations, anything and everything can be basically drawn into statistics. And statistics are kind of funny. You think of it this way. If I told you that 1 in 10 men will be balding by age 50, it doesn't sound like much, 10%. But you flip these numbers, and it sounds interesting. Because if I told you that 21% of people in the U.S. have tattoos, 21% doesn't sound like much. But if I told you that 1 in 5 people in the U.S. have tattoos, that sounds significant. But it's the same number. It's actually 1 in 5 is actually less than 21%. But it sounds like a higher number. It's just interesting. Not saying that you want to use this to twist your work in any kind of, in your favor or anything. But it shows you that you can use these to your advantage. So this week's book of the week, throw that in the chat room, is on statistics. And why not? It should be. We should be talking about statistics. We should be talking about numbers and how to draw conclusions about things. So the book of the week this week, why not? Statistics for Dummies. Not saying you're dummies. Just saying it's a very good book. You can find it on Amazon. I put the link in the chat room, and I'll be sharing that link throughout the week. This Statistics for Dummies, this is the math and science edition. It's not just about numbers, but it's also about how to use statistics for science. And so there's a lot of really good explanations in this. And really, this book does a good job of giving you the foundation to understand the basics of statistics. Because a lot of books seem like they start out real simple, then they get really complicated really fast. And it loses a lot of people. But this book does a really good job to build on this, to give you the foundation, and yet add what you need to learn more and to be able to handle some of the higher end stuff. And it does relate to science, obviously not to ghosts or anything like that, but it does a really good job of explaining statistics. And again, it's something that you need to know if you're conducting experiments, if you want to publish work, if you take paranormal research or any kind of anomalous research seriously, you should have some baseline understanding of statistics. So the book of the week this week, Statistics for Dummies, Math and Science, published by Deborah J. Rumsey, PhD. It's a good book. I don't actually own it, but I've read through it. I've looked through it. I have my own statistics books from when I was in college, and they get quite complicated quite fast. But this one from what I read, really, really good at building a foundation. Trust me, you might not like it. It's probably like getting that grape cough medicine. Trust me. Take the time to read it and understand it. Once you understand it, you can relate it to your research. And maybe it'll make you want to do more research out there in the field. And last but not least, I mentioned there's a huge story going to be happening tomorrow. In case you have, or you're not aware, especially if you're in the chat room, you're really going to want to hear this. Tomorrow is Dita's birthday. Dita in the chat room, happy birthday. I know it's 3 hours early, but happy birthday. And with that, I better get out of here before I get yelled at. I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.